This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by MHA of Dutchess County, Foam and Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Locksat Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Filming Kleiman Collins and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation.
Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday.
Oh my God, I feel so energized. I want to climb a mountain. Oh, I love it.
So I might have put some stickers in the book.
Did you?
I don't know.
I got
you so excited.
It literally dropped out.
put the sticker on your somewhere. And
the laptop that I'm currently using, it's going right on that.
Oh, I love it. Yes, we are going to go climb a mountain today. We're doing it. It's so fun and exciting. You're awesome.
You are too.
I had no idea how it was going to go, and it was great. How old are you?
28.
You are amazing. You are just incredible.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to know you. You're inspirational to me, and I just am so excited for you and everything that's going to happen for you in your life.
Much appreciated, Carla. Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, coming to you from the Mental Health America studios, and we got a great episode for you guys today. You've seen that we've had the good friend John Ondrasik, aka Five for Fighting, on the channel a number of times. Today, we have his other half. With us today, we have Carla Ondrasik. She was a big time when it came to the music industry. She was in the industry for about 25 years, was the former vice president of creative writer development at EMI Records at the height of their prominence in the music industry, I might add. Not to mention, she's worked with artists like Barbra Streisand, Johnny Mathis, Cher, Huey Lewis, Martina McBride, Earth, Wind & Fire, Mariah Carey, NSYNC, Christina Aguilera, and so much more. She also worked with her husband. I would hope so, at least. And then on top of that, she is promoting her new book, which came out last year, Stop Trying, which she sent me this lovely copy of. I'm so grateful for. And she even wrote a little note. It's so sweet. So without any further ado, we have with us Carla Ondrasik. Carla, how are you?
Hello. I'm so good. What an introduction. I love it.
Hey, you lived all of it. I'm just reading off notes. but again, thank you so much for the book. And I'm really excited to be speaking with you today. This literally just stemmed out of my last conversation with your husband, where he was talking about the book. You shared the clip. And I'm like, hey, you want to talk about the book online? It wasn't even a formal message. I just said it in the story. And you're like, sure, let's do it.
Yeah, that was really fun. And John's so proud of me, which is really great. I love that.
That's the way it should be in any kind of relationship. The fact that you guys are going back and forth. Oh, yeah. No, he was great when he was showing off your book and he was talking about you. And no, he was very happy and proud to talk about that in our last interview. No, this is really, really fun. So again, Stop Trying, the life transforming power of trying less and doing more. You can see I got some Star Wars stuff on the side here. It's not regular Yoda. It's Baby Yoda. But
Baby Yoda.
That reminds me of Star Wars Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. Do or do not. There is no try.
The famous very lines. Good. Wow.
Thank you. I'm a voice actor as well. but there you go. Do or do not. There is no try. It is simply doing or not doing. And that seems to be what you're tapping into with this book. So would you like to kind of dive into like your inspirations to this and the meaning behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you brought up Star Wars because there's an actual line that comes right before he delivers the iconic do or do not to Luke Skywalker. What he says to him is, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that is what this book is. This is for all of us to unlearn everything we thought about trying and what that word means. Because we think that it's brave. We think it's the first step. Like we have to try it first, right? But I'll get into, you know, all of that, you know, what it means and why it's bad. But my motivation for writing the book is just because it's who I am. I never think about the journey. I get a goal in my head and I go for it and I do what I need to do. And I tend to see people really putting all of these things in their way. Well, I'll try to, which means it's half-hearted. They're going to maybe do it. They're going to put, oh, excuses. Well, I tried, but this happened, or I tried, but they didn't let me. So, you know, excuses, blame, no accountability. And it just kills me because I'm a motivator. I want people to win. I want to take somebody from their dream to their end game. And when I hear that word try, it really, really disrupts that process. And they're not aware that they're doing it. That's the unlearn what you have learned. So, you know, in a way, we very unconsciously do know in our deep, deep mind that trying isn't the best option because we don't choose to try many times. But I want to bring it to a conscious level, and then we can use it and choose not to.
Without a doubt. Now, language and even the way that we talk to ourselves really affects the way that we act and how we process and how we think. So a lot of this is, as you said, unlearning what we've learned and replacing not only those habits, but also replacing our vocabulary as well. So yeah. I was curious, obviously, I said to you off camera, I haven't started the book yet. I'm in the middle of a move, so I haven't had the time to, but I am excited to get started on this. That being said, though, and you might cover it in the book, reframing, oh, there goes my notes, reframing the language around all of that. And I'm curious what you think of phrases like these. I queued up three different phrases, and I would love to hear what you think of all of these. Instead of saying, I'm trying to do this, saying, I'm working towards this. Instead of saying, I will try to be there, saying, I plan to be there. And instead of, I'll try to do that, I'm attempting to do that. Do you like any of those? Are they good? Are they bad? And why?
Okay. First of all, nothing is better than saying, I'm doing this. Okay. And it is neuroscience. Your brain reacts very differently when you say, I'm doing something, or I'm trying to, I'm attempting to, I'm planning to. The brain will light up a little bit when you say, I'm attempting to, planning to, trying to, because it's getting little hits of dopamine, serotonin, and adrenaline and all that. But when you say, I'm doing it, the brain is on fire. It's like, okay, now what steps are we taking? The attempting, you know, in the dictionary, the definition of try is an attempt or an effort to do something. But in reality, I'm trying is I'll maybe kind of sort of do it if-ish. It's a half-hearted attempt or an effort. Trying is a half-hearted attempt or an effort. Doing is you're going to take action. You're going to take a first step. So I don't like attempting to. I don't like I'm planning to, because, you know, yes, we have to have a roadmap and we have to plan our steps to what we're going to do, but you have to take the step. So there's nothing better than saying, I'm doing this. And if you do it and you start doing it, start taking steps, now you're in action mode. Now there's a place to go. So my brain goes into overload when I answer these questions because there's so much that I want to say. But attempting to, you know, planning to do it, I'm working on it, is nothing. The only answer is I'm doing it. And that's how you're going to find out whether it works or not.
Beautifully said. And there's a reason why I brought all those up is because it was try in disguise. So I wanted to reframe these different sayings and be like, oh, well, if I don't say try, let me just say something else. Well, let's try in disguise. So what are we doing here? So obviously you have the do or the do not. That's just simply the options here. But doing, and this is my perspective, and I would love to hear yours on this. Doing doesn't always mean success. It means you work towards something, you're working on it, you're physically putting in the effort to do something. Maybe it doesn't work out the first time around, or maybe you need to work around it, but it's just simply putting in the action to see if it works and see what you need to do moving forward. Would you feel the same way on that?
Yes. Doing does not equal success, but it does. Okay. Doing doesn't guarantee success, but it guarantees you a better chance at success instead of trying. So, and of course, yeah, when you're doing something, you're going to figure out this isn't working. I have to pivot. Now I'm going to go about it this way. Sometimes the greatest mistakes that we make when we're doing something, oh my God, an epic failure. I was doing it and I fell flat on my face. But guess what? I discovered this instead, which is even better. So yeah, never expect that you're guaranteed success for it. It's like going to the airport. Just because you're at your gate on time, even 2 hours early, does not guarantee that flight's going to take off. But if you're not sitting in that seat at that gate, you're absolutely not going to make that flight if you try to get to the airport, right?
Agreed.
And the airport doesn't say to us, hey, can you try to be here by 9:30? We want to try to take off. So because the businesses don't work that way. nothing can work that way on a try. And you wouldn't put your money in a bank that says, you know what, we're going to try and take care and monitor your money. We're going to try to keep it separate from everybody else. And we'll try to have it available to you when you want to withdraw. You'd be like, there's no way. I am not putting my money in that bank. No. You're going to the FDIC insured. You know, we are going to manage this money and blah, blah, blah. So for sure, you are definitely not guaranteed any type of success, but you are guaranteed a front seat, front row, better chance at having anything that you want happen when you put a do in front of it.
There's a couple of lines, a couple of quotes that come to mind. First to reference, well, your husband, five for fighting hockey legend, Wayne Gretzky, you miss all the shots you don't take. That's a big one. And that's just simply saying, it's like, you have to do it in order to get any kind of result from it. Another quote that I really like, my cousin in particular introduced me to it, but it's something along the lines of, even if you're on the right path, you'll get run over if you stay still.
Yeah, I love that. I love that for sure. And, you know, speaking of quotes, I've been challenged before. I think Michael Jordan said something about, you know, you got to try, you know, you can't stop trying. And this is a great moment here to say, I'm not talking about semantics. And I think that's what he meant when he said that. So the semantics is, you know, I'm going to try to pick up this pen. It's a very small action with very little effort. I mean, big ticket items in our life, our health, happiness, careers, relationship. Think about it. I'm going to try to spend more time with my kids. What does that look like? You're already half-hearting the process. Maybe you'll do pizza night on Friday night one time. That's what try looks like. I'm going to try to lose weight, try to eliminate salt from my diet. I'm going to try to make sales. I'm going to try to build my podcast. I'm going to try to get whatever. You're already half-hearting the process. I'm getting that person. I'm doing this. I'm making this happen. I mean, just saying it, your volume gets louder. You sit up straighter. You feel more excited. And it's just, it's a physical thing that happens. And for me, I'm like, am I the crazy person in the room? No. And that's why I wrote the book. And it's really resonating with people. Can I tell you a story? We're just jumping all around.
Please.
But this mindset is so quick. It doesn't take months or years to develop and to incorporate into your life. It happens immediately. I have seen people change their lives in less than 24 hours. Like, and I get texts every day. I got one yesterday from New Zealand. Carla, I can't tell you how busy I am and how my life is exploding right now. That's why I did the book. That's why I'm so excited. But so here's the story. So when my kids were younger, I would take them to the bus because the bus stop was at our local park. And I started to, and I have a dog, so I'd let the dog out at the park and we'd hang out. And I started seeing this guy walk around the park with these giant headphones on. I was in the music business, which we're going to talk about. There you go, like yours. And he would just walk around and around in the loop. And I was dying. I'm like, is he listening to Five for Fighting? What is this guy listening to, right, as he's walking around the park? But I never interrupted him. So one day, the headphones were off and he was like fiddling with them. And I went up and I said, hi, I see you here all the time. I'm just so curious. What are you listening to? And he goes, oh, I listen to podcasts and motivational talks and TED Talks and books on tape. I really seek motivation and inspiration because there's so many things I'm trying to do that I just can't seem to accomplish. And when I hear that word and I'll catch it, I'm like, my brain explodes. I'm like, ah, the try word. So total stranger, total true story. I said to him, tell me one thing, just one thing you're trying to do. And he said, you know, I'm trying to get back into swimming because I'm out of shape and we have the new pool at the YMCA. So I'm trying to get back into swimming. All I said to this guy was, why don't you stop trying to go swim and go swim? Why don't you stop trying to get back into swimming and go swim? And he looked at me like, okay, lady, you know, nice to meet you. Headphones back on. And he took off. And I thought, oh God, he's never coming back here. I have ruined his incredible time at the park. And I went home. And of course, the next day, same time, back at the thing. And I opened the car door. There is a maniac screaming across the park. I did it. I swam. I didn't try. I swam. And I was so happy. This guy was like waiting for me, and he has changed his whole life. I interviewed him. He's in the book. He quit his job. He is still swimming. His name is Armin Armani, and the guy was amazing. Less than 24 hours, he got it. He's like, wow. So the trying part, by the way, is worrying about, wondering about, thinking about, planning, making the lists, writing things down, talking about, sharing all the shit you're trying to do. And that's what he was doing. He was listening and waiting for motivation and wondering and worrying about all the stuff he's trying to do. And I'm like, hey, stop trying to do it and just go do it. And boom. I mean, that's how it works for everything, by the way.
Yeah.
Every single thing. You pick something that you're trying to do in your life right now, and I'll give you an action. I'll give you a step you can take to do it.
I'm sure that you can. And no, you have the right mindset towards it, without a doubt. So incredible story. And I'm excited to learn more about it in the book. But that just brings me to a question right there, how you didn't know the guy. You had this conversation and you told him, well, how about you stop trying and you just do it? That can come off as very blunt and very harsh to some people. But it's a very straightforward way of going about it. Do you feel that we use certain language like try, plan, attempt like that as a form of nicety, as a form of it is passive. It's definitely passive. But would you say it's a way of kind of sugarcoating and making sure that we are quote unquote nice when honestly we should be more kind rather than nice? Do you know the whole nice kind debacle?
Oh, absolutely. So first of all, you know, my message, I'm not the soft, gentle person in this regard, because I don't think that's what people need. I think I've got people that are struggling to make their dreams come true and they're suffering. You know, there are people that say, I'm trying so hard, but nothing's happening. Why is this happening? They don't need me to come in and soften their efforts. They need someone that's going to say, here's exactly what you need to do to get what you want. So my responsibility is not to be soft and gentle, but you bring up a great point. So if somebody comes to us and they need advice, we would say very gently and very softly, well, have you tried calling this person? Have you tried maybe doing this? Maybe you could try to whatever it is. What they need is call this person, get this book, you know, sign up for this class. They need strong, determined action that they can take. Not that the like, well, have you tried? And we do that because we think we're being kind. We want to be gentle and encouraging and soft. And, you know, not all of us are very, you know, have that persona, but you can deliver the strong message kindly. You know, here's who you need to call. This is what you need to do right now. This is what you need to stop doing and start doing. Something that goes hand in hand with this is many times we'll say to someone, well, I'll try to do that for you. Or if someone invites us to something and we don't really want to go, we'll say, well, I'll try to make it, because we think we're being kind. But in reality, we're not. The kind thing is to be honest and say, look, I'm not going to make it. Thank you for asking me, but I'm not going to attend that event that you just invited me to. Instead of, I'll try to be there. Now they know not to expect you. Now they're like, well, my friend said he was going to try to come, so I'm going to save a seat for him. Or can we wait 10 more minutes because they were going to try to make it, right? I'm going to order their favorite, you know, cupcakes because they said they would try to come. When you say no, now they know to fill the seat with somebody else, right? It's kinder to be honest. It's kinder to say no. And we have a hard time in general saying no because we think that it's mean. We think that we're coming off, you know, as ungrateful. But in reality, it's the kindest, nicest thing that you can do to somebody is to be honest and not set them up for disappointment when you say you'll try and you're not and you can't do it.
Yeah, you got to be straightforward with people. It's the best, easy way of going about it. Communication is key. And there's a freedom to it. There's a freedom when you can let them know what exactly is going on instead of leaving people hanging. One of the worst things that I found when I was job hunting constantly was just the lack of response, because that just kind of leaves you in that limbo period. I loved it when companies got back to me and said no. Yeah. I did. I did. I was like, thank you for responding. Thank you for telling me, because that means I can move on. I can keep going. You know, I don't have to wait in this limbo period. I don't have to ruminate thoughts of whether or not should I send another email? Should I try? Should I do this? Should I do that? They gave me a clear answer and now I can move on. It is so, so freeing. It's such a lovely thing.
You get it. Like, you got it 100%. And so the other thing is, it's freeing to the other person, like you.
Yep.
But when you're the person that says no,
yes,
you're free also.
Yes.
Because now, like when you say you'll try to somebody, it's in there. Oh, I said I would try to make that connection. Or I said that
hanging over your head. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's in there and it's disturbing you. And you're, but the minute you say no, it is gone. It is so gone. So I love that. I love it for so many reasons. Yeah.
No, it is very great in that reason, is for sure. Another thing that I just want to talking about the nicety and the kindness to it all. You know, people say they'll try to do something to be nice to somebody else. But another aspect is trying to be nice to yourself as well. When you know you're not doing something, but let's say you're having a conversation with somebody. Let's say we're having a conversation right now and you're asking me how things are going at my job or Connor, you wanted to start exercising. How's that going? It's like, I'm trying to get into that, trying to get this momentum going, trying to be there 3 or 4 days a week when I know in my head I haven't shown up once. Do you feel that in that case, we say try as a defense mechanism for our own sake on the inside to make ourselves feel better, almost kind of like a verbal self-medication?
You are. You are medicating. Because remember, I said you're getting those little hits of serotonin, dopamine, adrenaline. You know, you're kind of fooling yourself in that moment. It's making you feel good. It's the person at the party that says, oh, I'm trying to write my screenplay. I'm trying to develop my podcast. I'm trying to find a new job. You know, it's that same person that comes back next year. How's the book going that you were trying to write? How's the screenplay going? Well, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, a person to whatever. They're still in that loop of trying and they're going to come back year after year after year. So yes, you are self-medicating in a way. And, you know, saying you're not going to do something is so much stronger than to try and fail. I love saying, I'm not doing that. Forget it. I'm not going to try. I'm just not doing it. I do this a lot on vacation because like I love eating well. I love working out. I love being fit. I'm a little person. I'm 5 foot, you know? So I like, you know, clothes and I like to look good. So I used to, when I go on vacation, I would say, well, I would Google the gym. I would look at the menus and I'd be like, oh, I'm going to work out every day. I'm going to try to like keep my schedule. And now it's like, hell no, I'm going to not work out. I'm going to eat everything and anything. I'm going to drink every day. I'm going to have dessert. I'm going to sleep late. I choose not to. And here's why, because the side effect of trying and failing is negative self-talk. And you think of the person that says, I'm trying to lose weight, trying to go to the gym, trying to be a better partner, trying to all these things, trying to get a better job. And they try and they fail. They try and they fail. Then the negative self-talk. You're weak. You're a loser. You're lazy. Because you're trying. Duh. All those. Yeah. You're not going to accomplish your goal. So yeah, you're going to be weak and you're going to be lazy because you're not doing it. And then we end up just trying, failing, and then giving up.
And it's a cycle.
And that's horrible. Horrible. Instead of saying, nope, I'm not going to quit smoking this year. I already know I have a stressful year or whatever your reason is. I'm not going to work out this month because I don't feel like it. I'm not inspired. So saying no is so strong and just deciding not to do something is so much better than trying to do it and fail. God, I had another thought come into my head for a minute there, but it's gone.
Oh, it's all good. Hopefully we'll get it back. Hopefully we'll get it back. You'll get it at 2 a.m. in the morning. And if you do, just record it on your phone. I'll edit it in. But that being said, great, great message that you have here. There were a couple of things that you said. I just want to really pinpoint for a moment. Earlier, you were saying of how we are nice to people who come to us for advice and say, it's like, hey, have you tried this? Have you tried that? Have you tried this? I actually have a very, very relevant and recent story in my life where a friend of mine, he was considering doing a total career change, total career change and was like, wanted to get into real estate because, you know, real estate's the thing to do to make money, whatever. And he was saying how he talked to a number of people and a number of people were saying, it's like, yeah, give it a try. Absolutely. I think that'd be good. And I just straight up said to him, not just because, you know, the do or do not factor. I also knew the guy and I was like, dude, no, that's for you. That's stupid. Yeah. Don't do it. I was straight. Now, mind you, I'm like super, super close with him. He's one of my best friends. But when he came to me, I'm like, I don't think you realize what that all entails. Don't do it. There is something much better for you out there. Take the skills that you already have and utilize those instead of trying to create a new skill out of nowhere. So that was something. And he came back a week later and it's like, okay, I'm not doing that. Thank you for saying that. I needed that. I needed the straightforward, assertive honesty. And then another thing, just this popped up into my head. Billy Joel, I believe it was a 60 Minutes interview. He was asked why he felt he was such a legend in the music industry. And he's like, well, first of all, I don't think I'm a legend. Second of all, I'm competent. I know how to do the work. I know how to do the thing. I know how to tour. I know how to record. I know how to work with people. I am competent. And this is the quote that I love so much. Being competent in a world filled with incompetence looks extraordinary.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think about that all the time when I'm trying to set myself moving forward to work on anything. It is a matter of being competent and consistent. Those are the things that are the biggest things. You can have somebody with all the talent and all the resources in the world, but if they don't actually put in the consistent effort, they're not going to get anywhere. There's a reason why some people are like, I'm so smart, I'm so good, I'm so this, I'm so that, I do nothing wrong. How am I not getting anywhere? Well, are you putting in the work?
This is fantastic. Yeah, I will share. I love that Billy Joel quote. And it makes so much sense for sure. It's why people that are not as talented have success because they're competent. They know how to work the system. And then people that are super successful or talented are not competent. So it's amazing. It's so true. I love that.
No, it's a crazy thing, but it's a true thing. Absolutely. And if you don't know how to do something yourself, surround yourself with the people who do know how to do it. And you know, that is still the effort right there. That is the work to put something into it. One of the things that I always do, especially when I'm here at work and somebody asks me, it's like, hey, how are we coming along with this project? And let's say I haven't started it yet. In the past, I would have said, oh, we're working on it. We're trying for whatever. Now I straight up say, it's like, haven't started it yet, but I'm scheduled this day to work on it. Is that okay for you? Or do we need to change the schedule around?
Yeah. Here's the date. Here's the time. I'm not doing it now, but this is, you have an action, you know, mode going. You know, just segueing into the music business a little bit.
Please do. I was wanting to get there.
Well, the mindset of trying is not the mindset of the person that's going to become vice president of creative writer development. You know, you can't try. It's the people that are doing. It's the people at the top, the presidents of music, you know, record labels. And like you said, the artists that have that doing mindset, you know, it's not the person that's trying that becomes the top head of the company or the big A&R person or the agent or the manager. And when you say, I'm going to do this, your brain literally changes. Now it says, okay, boom, what are we doing? And you get more creative. And it forces and causes you to think outside the box. So when I remember being given a song. I was at Chrysalis Music Publishing with Tom Sturgis. He was my boss. And I was a professional manager. And we would get songs in from the UK. And my job was to pitch the songs. And I remember this song came in that I knew I could get a cover on. I knew that if I had, you know, an exclusive, because everybody in the company could pitch the song all over the world. We were all given the same stuff. And I asked my boss, just give me a 24-hour exclusive on this song and I'm going to deliver you a hit. I'm doing this. I want this. I'm going for it. And he said, your 24 hours starts right this second. So get going. And I took that song to John Kolodner, who was at Geffen Records at the time. Pretty famous guy. He was more famous than Aerosmith, the bands that he represented as an A&R director. He was iconic. Anyway, so I called his office because Geffen Records had Guns N' Roses, Aerosmith. They had all these really great bands. I had this huge song. And so I called over there and the secretary said, he doesn't meet with publishers. You know, he doesn't listen to songs from publishers. You're going to have to get your song to these people some other way. Like maybe call the management. And I'm like, I said, no, tell him I'm coming over right now to play him this song. I did that because I was doing it. I had this narrow pathway here. And I marched myself over to Geffen Records and the door was wide open. I think he was more interested in meeting the creature that like demanded to see him than to hear the song I had, you know? And of course he's like, come in, who are you? Put the cassette in, that's how long ago it was. And the song was called Heart of Stone. And he said, first of all, it is a hit. It was the title track, big single for Cher, for her biggest crossover single. It was the video, the artwork. It was she's one of the biggest artists, by the way. If you Google Cher, biggest top selling female artist ever. Okay.
Oh, by
and
far.
It brought her over to the United States to have a big hit here. And then of course she's still recording songs, which is crazy, but we developed a really nice relationship, John and I, but it was that mindset of, I'm not going to try to get this song covered. Everybody in the company gets songs brought to them. Oh, let me try to get this on a record. Let me try to get this as the single. Let me try to get to that person to see if I could try to whatever. No, you can't think like that. So when you say you're going to do it, it really forces you to become this monster of like, What am I going to do? And how am I going to do it? And it's so much more exciting and it's so much more fun. And failure becomes nothing when you do that.
Yeah.
Failure is the greatest thing that can happen to you, because when you do something and you jump in and you fail, you fall flat on your face, you scuff yourself up. Now you learn, okay, that didn't work. So next time I'm doing it this way.
Yeah.
And so failure becomes the greatest gift. And you know, so many of us are so afraid of failing. And what are people going to think of me if I don't do it? I said I'm going to do it and then I fail. The people, what they're thinking is, wow, you were so brave. You actually did the thing that I would never even do. So people don't look down on you. They actually admire you. And so anyway, so that was like one little story. And I did that so many times. I'd walk into a business and say, you know, I want to work here. And they'd say, well, we just hired so-and-so. I'm like, well, fire them and hire me, because I'm the person that you want. I've said those words. Fire them and hire me. You want me. And people feel that energy from you. They're inspired and excited. I just remembered what I was going to say earlier.
Yes. All right. Here it is.
It came into my brain and it's perfect for right now too. We feel like we need to wait for the motivation to start something. So when I feel motivated, when I feel ready, you know, but motivation never comes first. When you start to do the thing, that's when you get motivated to keep going. So it's like, who's going to want to wake up at 5 a.m. and go to the gym? Nobody. They're not going to be motivated to get out of their warm, comfy bed while it's still dark out. You're never going to be motivated. But it's getting to the gym and meeting your friends there, feeling that sweat, that workout, starting your day, the pride, the accomplishment you feel. The motivation follows the action. It's when you start making those sales calls and make your first sale, right? It's the realtor who sells his first house. That's going to get you motivated to sell your next one. So motivation doesn't come first. No one's going to be motivated to just kind of do all the drudgery and the hard work. But if you want to get that feeling of motivation, you have to do it. So anybody listening that's waiting for the motivation to begin to do something, you're never going to get it. It's never going to miraculously come to you. Start doing it, and then you're going to feel the motivation to keep going. And it's really magical and really great.
It is a magical experience, giving yourself that ability to do so. I've talked about this with one of my best friends. It's discipline and accountability over the motivation. When the motivation wanes thin, it's the discipline and the accountability that's going to keep you moving forward.
And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
When we talk about mental health, we often focus on the symptoms, anxiety, depression, isolation. But what we don't talk about nearly enough is the root cause. And more often than not, that root cause is trauma. This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at Mental Health America of Dutchess County. Trauma doesn't always look dramatic. Sometimes it's quiet. Sometimes it's an experience you've carried alone for years. Sometimes you've never spoken about it because it feels shameful or because you were told to just move on. But here's the truth. Holding a painful secret doesn't protect you. It weighs on you. It shapes how you think, how you feel, and how you move through the world. It can impact relationships and jobs, the way you attach to people and interpersonal friendships and work relationships, and you don't have to keep carrying that weight by yourself. Healing is possible when you finally feel safe enough to talk about it. Contact a therapist today. If you need help with that process, contact your primary care physician or call MHA of Dutchess County. We're happy to help you find someone. It's time to take care of yourself. You just may have the best year of your life.
For 60 years, we here at Foam and Wash Car Wash pride ourselves on giving back to the community because we're your neighbors. It's our community too. In celebration of Foam and Wash's 60th anniversary, we want to say thank you. By visiting the link on screen and in the description, you'll receive one free hot wax and shine car wash. No hassles, no gimmicks, just a token of our appreciation. Foam and Wash Car Wash, home of the Unlimited Wash membership. Thank you for being part of Foam and Wash Car Wash's story for the last 60 years.
This episode is also sponsored by Juniors 2. Come on out to Juniors 2 in Poughkeepsie, New York for Thursday Night Trivia, hosted by CMJW Entertainment. Play as a team as you work your way through four rounds of trivia categories in order to win gift certificates and other prizes. Juniors 2 Trivia Nights, every Thursday starting at 7 p.m. at 1126 Dutchess Turnpike, Poughkeepsie. Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
In 1 year, I went from unemployed making videos in my family room to becoming a top 40 under 40 honoree, gaining hundreds of thousands of views. And I'm just getting started. It's time for the second annual Walsh Wednesday Fun Drive. It's Connor coming at you once again, and what better day to launch the second annual Fun Drive than to do it on National Connor's Day? Seriously, that's a thing, not some April Fool's prank. Guys, 2025 was such a transformative year here at Walsh Wednesday, and I'm so excited to see what 2026 has to offer. Over the span of the last 60 plus episodes, not only have we gotten to speak with local leaders and creators, but we worked with platinum-selling artists, Broadway veterans, Hollywood actors, banana ball players, and even Olympians. Because of the hard work from this past year, Walsh Wednesday is once again nominated for Best Podcast, part of Hudson Valley Magazine's Best of Hudson Valley. None of this would be possible without you, so thank you. You can help Walsh Wednesday continue to grow by donating to our GoFundMe and by voting for Walsh Wednesday for Best Podcast. Both links can be found in the description of this episode. And if you don't have the funds to donate at this time, that's fine. I totally get it. Just sharing alone goes such a long way. We got some really cool plans for 2026. As you've seen, we've recently launched our trivia spinoff, Walsh Whiteboards, which honestly has been a blast to film. Not just that, we're hoping to go on the road more often to show you incredible sights, stories, exhibits, and more that can't be captured in the studio. From the bottom of my heart, I greatly appreciate you for believing in what Walsh Wednesday is and what it will become. Connor Walsh signing off for Walsh Wednesday on National Connor's Day. And as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show and play. It's interesting, you know, what you were saying about like going, showing up in person and being like, hey, I'm showing up and he's going to listen to this whether he likes it or not. You know, I had kind of similar aspect and something that I try to recreate in my life as often as I can. Back in 2018, I was actually in this music competition through PBS. It was called Celebration of Music. And the whole idea was we were on TV, sure, we had to perform, sure. It was any one of those talent competitions, you know, but you needed votes. And I didn't just want TV to be it. I was in college at the time, College of St. Rose, and I went around every single dorm, knocked on doors with a big sign with all the information. And I said, hey, you don't know me, but I'm a musician. I'm here at this school. Could you give me a vote, please? It's free to do. And, you know, most people did. And then I went outside of the dorms, went to the Albany community, started knocking on doors there. Didn't have as great of reception that time, whatever. And then I was like knocking on doors of radio stations and TV stations.
Amazing.
Every TV station said no, but I did manage to get on a couple of the radio stations. So that's good. But it was just like physically showing up and giving them no other option. And you know what? I won it.
You won it because, yeah, that's doing knocking on those doors. That's, you know, it's amazing. I love that story. I live for those stories. I love reading about successes like that. You know, you're that guy. And so, yeah, it's the I'll try to do something is not the guy that's going to knock on every door in the dorm. Just there's no way. And so I absolutely love that. You know, John, when I oh, my God, I was at Motown Records. And having a meeting, and I heard a voice through the wall.
Ooh, I get to hear your side of the story. I love it.
And that was John's voice. But what I said to myself was not, wow, I'm going to try to find out who that is. I'm going to try to maybe work with that guy. My first thought was, that voice is going to be on the radio. That is a radio voice. And then I just did anything I needed to do to get to that voice and get it on the radio, which meant seeing him perform, signing him to a publishing deal, shopping him for a record deal, and doing all the steps, right? So, but it was literally from a voice through the wall. I go from A to Z. I'm going to make it happen. You wanted to win your competition. Okay, I'm going to win it. And this is what I have to do. I'm literally knocking on doors and asking people for their votes. So it's really, it's an amazing thing. And isn't it so much fun to do that?
Oh yeah.
So much more fun than going, well, I'm trying, but I can't because it's going to be so hard and other people aren't going to want to vote for me. It's all those excuses and the blame and, you know, I may do it. I may not. It's like, that's just so depressing. And like,
it's
sometimes you get lucky. Those people may get lucky and something happens for them, but not usually.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Without a doubt. When I was doing that, I was still terrified. I was terrified as all hell.
Yes.
And oh my God, I remember the first night that I went around to do it. Thank God I was wearing, I think I had a jacket on because when I took the jacket off and I saw my shirt, sweat stains all over. I was like, I don't know if I've ever sweat this much in my life, you know? And it's a terrifying thing, but like once you do it, it gets easier to do.
Easier and easier. Oh, absolutely. I'm afraid every day. You know, writing my book, first of all, I never thought I'd be an author. I knew that I had this message. And I had women's groups, anyone that knows me in my life, literally anyone on any periphery of my life, they know that you can't say try around me, right? and of course, I've motivated and worked in music publishing. I worked in employee relations before that. So I've been sharing this message, but you know, I'm 62 years old now, and I had the huge career, and I raised my two children, and I've worked hard my whole life. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm going to write a book now and start working again. So, and I had to learn how to do all of this. I had never written professionally. I'd never read a book about writing a book. So it was like just thrown in the middle of the deep end, and you just got to find your life preservers and you got to find your way out. And I was so scared. I was talking about things I didn't even know what they meant. I was hiring people. I needed publicists. I needed to do the whole social media thing. Every day I was terrified of everything. And you just do it. You just muddle through it, because at the end of the day, I knew that I was given this opportunity to share this message on a big scale. And that's was bigger than my fear. It was bigger than anything. You know, we fear failure.
Yes.
So we say we're going to try because we want to protect ourselves. Oh, I only said I would try to do it. I didn't say that I would do it. So if I fail, it's all good. And we fear success too. We fear success. Oh my God, what if I say I'm going to do this and I do it? Now my life's going to change. Now I'm going to have to travel more. Now I'm going to have to hire people. Now I'm going to have to level up, you know?
There is comfort in the discomfort, for sure. You get used to it.
100%. You know, even with the book, I'm like, well, my gosh, what if it is successful? I'm going to have to start doing all these things that I've never done, that I say that I don't want to do. So, but you just figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, you just figure it out along the way. And so, yeah, that's definitely the fear and getting in there and doing it and failing and falling is all a part of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. It's all part of life. That's how we learn. That's how we grow. You brought up your husband, John, and I've been meaning to ask this. I was going to save it for the very, very end, but let me throw it in now. So, of course, your husband, John, Five for Fighting, you know, some of his biggest hits, 100 Years, The Riddle, Chances, they're all about understanding and seizing life. How has your professional and personal relationship, being married for, what was it now, about 25 years?
Influenced 28 years.
How has that influenced both of you guys, how you approach the world?
Wow. You know, John is an amazing guy. He is my best friend. He writes the songs that are about life, as you said. And I think together we're very different. I don't think, and he will admit it, he hasn't always lived the lyrics that he's written.
How many of us have?
Right? I mean, he feels them and knows them and wants them. And it hasn't been till later in our life where he's actually living those words and appreciating the moment. 100 years, you've only got 100 years to live, like being in it. And I'm more of the more spiritual, be present in the moment type of person. So we have really positively, you know, influenced each other, the yin and the yang, and it's how we raised our children. Mm. So, it's worked really well for us. And those songs, I wish he'd write more. I want more from him. I keep saying, write another record, write it, because he just expresses how we all feel inside so well. And I've learned a lot from him, and he's learned a lot from me, and we're in the best years of our life right now. It's really great.
That's beautiful. That really is beautiful. You know, I don't know how many of the other interviews with him you've seen, but I've mentioned before, like, Superman, It's Not Easy was like one of my first memories of liking a song. I was like 3 years old and I would have my dad rock me to sleep to it.
Oh,
you can tell how Superman is still very big in my life. I had John sign a Superman shirt for me and I hung it up. It's never being worn ever again. So, you know, that's the kind of influence that his music has had on me for sure. So getting to speak with him and work with him, and now to be able to speak and work with you, this is a beautiful and full circle, surreal thing. This is crazy. But, which is so amazing. So thank you for that. We've been focusing so much on the book and the narrative and a lot of kind of the background on it. You gave us that fantastic story about Cher, but you have such a repertoire of people that you've worked with. And I'm just curious, we listed off a number of the artists, but are there certain songs that you worked on that you made them happen one way or another that have stuck with you and resonated with you?
Yeah. Well, there's two. Okay. So
I want to hear them.
And so the first story is, there was this guy that was signed to our publishing company. His name is Jack Kugel, and he mostly wrote music. So he worked with, I can't think of that. It's a duo, a girl group. Anyway, so he would mostly write music, and he was in my office one day. So I get a call from this unknown artist, Jim Brickman, who is a piano player. And he was working on an album and he wanted one song that had lyrics and he would have a guest artist sing it on his album. So this guy, Jack Kugel, who's a music writer, is in my office. I get the call from Jim Brickman, who's a music writer. And he says, I need a lyricist. I want to collaborate. So I said, I'll send somebody right over to your house. It's a guy named Jack Kugel, who was in my office. So I hung up the phone and Jack looks at me. He's like, Carla, I don't write lyrics. And I said, you do now. Well, you do now. There's like, we're doing it. I'm throwing you into the middle of the ocean. And he went over to Jim Brickman's house in the Hollywood Hills. And together they wrote a song called My Valentine. And that song went on to be the comeback huge single for Martina McBride, put her at the top of the country charts. It was the top of the pop charts. It is played forever, every year, till the end of time on around Valentine's, right?
Yep.
It was her big, big hit. It took her from here to here. It made our publisher number one publisher of the year in Nashville that year.
Wow.
Because he was standing there and he said, I don't write lyrics. And I said, well, you do now. And pushed him into a zone where he was not comfortable, but it got him to see what he was made of. So that's a really fun story of, great, we're doing
that's
this.
A good one.
It's go time, right?
Yeah.
And then the other one was Christina Aguilera, her big hit Genie in a Bottle. her biggest breakout, it launched her into superstardom. So I had a writer by the name of Steve Kipner and a writer by the name of David Frank. Steve Kipner wrote let's get physical for Olivia Newton-John. And David Frank was in a group called The System. So his hit was, "You Are In My System." I mean, both of those songs at the time were a decade old. Those songwriters had not had a hit in 10 years. And I knew they lived near each other. They were both signed to me as staff writers. And I said, "You guys need to get together and write." And because they had both had previous hits 10 years prior, they lived near each other, but they weren't doing it. And one day they're both in my office. They were both, you know, meandering around the EMI offices. And I'm like, "Guys, know each other, write together." The first song they wrote together was "Genie in a Bottle."
Mm. There you go.
The first song. They both went on to have reignited huge careers, made millions and millions of dollars. Of course, when you have a hit song, everybody wants to work with you, and they produced it and wrote it. And that's just being in the moment, taking the risk, making things happen. They were, "Oh, we're trying to get together, trying to get..." No, you need to get together now. This is you. Go off and write together. And they did. So that's how success happened. So I love those two stories, especially.
Look at you putting the puzzle pieces together. You're putting together a puzzle that you didn't know that needed solving yet, but that's fantastic. Oh, I love those stories. You know, it reminds me of the Sir Richard Branson quote. If you're handed an incredible opportunity and you don't know how to do it, say yes and figure it out later.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to tell you this. This is an embarrassing story. But when I was in music publishing, I worked across the street from the Motown building. So it's actually the same building where I discovered John. Okay. But I discovered him many years later. But early in my career, I was probably like 21 years old and I'm pitching songs and I'm in the R&B, I'm in the Motown building in an office. And there's a man sitting in the corner of the room and he's just staring at me like he's in this meeting with me. And I'm like, "Well, who is that weird guy staring at me?" So I looked at him like, "Excuse me, why are you staring at me? And who are you?" It was Michael Jackson's father. It was Joe Jackson. And he looked at me and he said, I'm Joe Jackson. And can you dance?" And they were doing a tour with Janet Jackson and LaToya and all. They needed dancers. And I said, "Yes." I was like, "Yeah, I can dance, sure." So he said, he gave me an address and he said, "I want you to show up at the studio. We're rehearsing and we'll have choreographers." And I just said, "Yes, just what you said, if you can't." And let me tell you something, it was an epic failure. I showed up, I had on like a ballerina bodysuit and pink tights. I'm like, okay, you know, no, that was wrong to begin with. I had no idea what I was doing and he was there. And I went up to him and I said, "Mr. Jackson, I can't do this. Like, it's not working out." He was like, "Please stay. Please come back tomorrow." He was incredible, that guy. Like, there was his energy of do not quit, don't give up. But it was a hard no. I was like, I cannot humiliate myself. So I did say yes, but it was really, I should have said no, not for me.
But you gave it a shot. You showed up. Went to see if it worked for you. And just as we said before, doing doesn't always mean success, but it puts you in the right spot to figure it out for yourself.
Absolutely. I've never done that again, let me tell you.
Oh, but you could have been on tour with the Jacksons. Oh, how crazy.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that like crazy? Crazy things happen in the music business. Absolutely crazy things.
Oh my gosh. That is a funny one. I don't know if I'll keep this story in the podcast, but I want to share this one real quick. So I was working with Tim Reynolds from Dave Matthews Band one time. Mm-hmm. He was performing up in Albany, and this is when I was doing live sound and hospitality. And we got the stage set up. We got everything going for him. He was great to work with during the sound check. Everything was great. About 30 minutes before the show starts, two big bodyguards show up, like dwarfed me and my friend. And they come up to us and they said, "It's like, hey, Tim really liked you guys. Want to go into his green room and get high before the show?" And we're like, "I've never touched a drug in my life." And I'm like, "Yes, let's do it." And he was just going to smoke weed. That's his thing. Dave Matthews Band. Come on. You go to a concert, it just smells like weed. That's the perfume of the place. Sure. And funny enough, though, my boss was right behind me, grabbed my coworker and I by the collars. And it's like, "If you want to keep this job, you're not." And it was like, "Sean, how many opportunities are we going to get to do this?" So it's like one of those almost moments in the music industry for me. But at least I can say that I worked with and had a great time with Tim Reynolds. But no, I didn't get to blaze it in his green room with him.
You got to keep that story in. It's a great story. You were saved, but boy.
Oh, it would have been great. That was a kind of crazy concert, though. That was not so much Tim, everybody else around us. That one was nuts. Wow. But Tim was fantastic to work with. So, so good. Oh my gosh. So Carla, obviously, again, you had such an incredible career, but then you decided to step back. You decided to step back and take on a very, very big, incredible role, motherhood and matriarchy and being the head of the household there. So many people have and will continue to say career over the family. Look at what I've built. I can't say no to this. I have to keep going. You made the decision to step back and put your family first and leave what you had been building. Again, EMI in the heights of its power in the music industry. And you left for your family. Walk us through that. There are probably some people out there who are going to be listening to this is like, what was she thinking? So what, walk us through that.
Wow. Yeah. It's so, I've never thought of it that way, the way you put it, you know? So I was older when I had our first son, Johnny. He was 35 and you know, it's a hard business. I mean, every day was you got to be at the top of your game, you know, especially when you're being promoted and you're given a contract. And so the level of work ethic was just so huge that when I had my son, I did put in my notice that I would come back, you know, the maternity leave. Okay. But I realized there's no way I want a nanny or somebody to raise my child. I've waited my whole life for this. And so once I had him, it really became an easy decision to say, I'm not coming back because look at this that I have now, you know? And John, it was simultaneous. When I had Johnny, his career, Superman came out. So he had to go off and promote that. So I'm like, I have to be here. I have to be the one that takes care of our child. And so, you know, I played with the idea of consulting. You know, I had offers from other companies to consult from them from home. But my days were so full and exciting with this new journey that it really became very easy for me to let it go. And I had our daughter, Olivia, right away, 18 months later. And John was gone for the first 2 or 3 years of their life. He was touring for months. It would be like, Daddy's coming home. We'll make the sign and the bus would pull up or the car and he'd come out. And he was all in when he was home and he was so much fun, but then he'd be gone again. He would leave our home with a suitcase and come back to a new home. I would have moved. Imagine you're moving, right? I would move an entire home with children and he'd literally come home to the next house. He's done that twice in our lives. Yeah. I'm gone. I'm going on tour and I just move us to a bigger house as our family was expanding. And so that job was harder. It's much easier to go to work and work hard and go to lunch with people, right? Than to, you know, but I enjoyed every second of being a mom. And so it was a whole new set of learning skills and everything. And it's been great. I still love it. I'm still a very active parent. We have a son in Texas who's living there. I just spent Mother's Day with him. We went to the racetrack. And our daughter is following in John's footsteps. She's, you know, focusing on a music songwriting career. She's amazing. I mean, as someone that was in publishing, her songwriting skills are off the charts. So unique, so amazing. And she's got the it factor, you know. So, it was a lot to give up. I still mentor musicians. I still keep in touch with people that, if I hear someone that's really good, I'll do everything I can to help them. I'm still doing it. I'm active today helping people.
Wow. Absolutely incredible. And I'm still hung up on what you said about having to move twice on your own. Like two huge things. That's a huge thing on John. That's a huge thing on you. Two totally different perspectives of it though. Because here he is like just showing up to a brand new place and, you know, trusting you to do it. And then there's you who is managing the move and, you know, that's a lot, but he's the one off touring and paying for it. And, you know, this and that, Oh my God.
I'd call my mom and dad. Like I remember the first move, my mom and dad came out. My father packed up the whole garage and carload after carload, you know, moved it to the, he was amazing, my dad.
That's good.
And my mom would help me in the kitchen, wrapping all the dishes and getting rid of stuff. So, you know, I had help with my parents, which was great. Moving into this home that we're in now, I would call him and say, can I do this? Can I do that? And the great thing was he would say yes, because he was busy and distracted and like, yeah, do it. If he was here, he would have been like, no. So I worked the system to my benefit. I'm like, oh, honey, I know you only have 2 minutes, but I got to run this by you. Like, yes, just do it. So that was
great. Worked out. Nice. I love it. I want to touch upon what you said at the beginning of that story. You said how you never thought about it the way that I described it. And that's what separates you from the people who would be thinking that way. The fact that you never thought about it that way means that those were your priorities. That's where it was. The fact that that wasn't the concern, that wasn't the issue, that just goes to show you, you're cut from that breed. It's like, you lived that life, you were proud of it, you felt fulfilled, and now you're moving on to the next part of your life, and you felt like, yeah, no, this seems natural, this is right, this is cool. While other people would second guess it all the time, you're like, yep, nope, that's right for me. Fantastic.
Wow, so true. Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about the process or what I was giving up. I just was like, boom, we're doing this now. That's kind of, that's very true how I am.
And that says so much to your character too. That says so much to what you built, what you accomplished, what you were proud of, and what you were looking forward to be proud of going forward, being the mom, taking care of your two kids, being able to raise them, hold down the homestead, do all of that. That's really incredible, because it is a level of self-sacrifice. You may not have seen it as self-sacrifice at the time. Yeah. Hell, you may not even see it as that now, but it is. It really is. But as you said, you never stopped helping. You never stopped working. You never stopped consulting in one way or another. And that's essentially what brought you here to this book, essentially, right? Because it was through all the mentoring and all the people that you were touching and affecting and helping to build, where it's like, yeah, no, I got to write this book now, huh?
Yeah. And even, you know, moving forward now, like I'm pulling myself back. It's been 2 years of writing and then pre-promotion and then promoting, and I'm speaking and I have clients, consulting clients, and, you know, I'm definitely in work mode, but I kind of, you know, people are asking, well, what's the second book? You know, what's your next book? And so I've been like, you know, I may not do a second book, but I have a great idea for one, but it's a great idea. So this is Stop Trying. The next book is Start Talking, because everything in my life came from not with my head down in a phone, but talking to the person next to me at the airport, talking to the people in the jacuzzi after I work out, right? Talking to people, you get so much. But, you know, I may choose not to, I may choose to, but I'm allowing myself that grace, and I feel really clear. I'm completely fine if I don't do another book. And then if I decide to do one, I'll be excited to do that too. So I'm kind of like in this mode of, I'm still working on this one, tapering back a little bit, and then I'll decide what I want to do next.
Yeah. You're still in this season. You're still in the stop trying season. You want to make sure that you give to it the energy that you feel is proper to it. And then you also need to give energy to yourself. You have to care for yourself. And then when it's time, as you said, there's a certain time for certain things. It's like when you block it out, when you schedule, it's like, it's a matter of do or do not. And when you're ready to do, there you go.
Yes.
Well, it kind of reminds me, I literally just had a meeting with one of my clients yesterday, and we're producing a podcast for him. But besides that, he's also a real estate broker. He's worked in marketing. He's done a lot of big things. He's on the board of a lot of stuff around here. And he said, is like, I'm proud of what I do, but I'm working really hard right now for people to have less access to me, and I have more access to myself.
Wow.
And that's such a key thing, because again, you can't pour from an empty cup. You got to have the energy for yourself. You have to be able to take care of yourself to then be able to take care of others. And it sounds like you're leading into that once the Stop Trying book tour is all done.
Right. And I love when you just said, I'm working toward. He didn't say, I'm trying to create space for myself. I'm working toward, you know, allowing space for me, you know.
And he did say that. That is a quote. Yeah, that is not great. Me just working this into the conversation. That is what he said to me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it affects our whole, everything in our life, you know, our personal health, you know, we have to make that and create that time for ourselves. You know, I love to say, we, you know, if you are trying to make that dermatology appointment, that annual dermatology appointment that we all need, and you're trying to find an in-network doctor, trying to talk to your friends about who they go to, trying to figure out the best time to go, you could try for 6 months and not make that appointment and miss a huge diagnosis. You have to just make the freaking phone call. You have to make the appointment. You can't try to schedule that. It affects our health. Trying to lose weight, trying to cut out sugar. What is that? You're not doing it. You're just trying, and your blood sugar is going higher and your salt intake is going. You're not doing it. I'm also the president of our HOA, which is probably the craziest thing I'll say on this entire podcast, because who wants to do, like, really, if you're, it's a thankless job. It's like horrible. But there were some changes that I wanted in my neighborhood that were not happening. It was 20 years of the current board trying to do these things. So I'm like, that's it. I'm on the board. I'm the president. And in a year and a half, we concluded a huge project that they'd been talking and trying to do for forever. So you can jump in and apply this to anywhere you want. Like, what do I want done? I'm doing it. And, you know, and then especially when you were saying about for your own self, I'm the priority. So yeah, I'm tired. I'm going to stop now. I'm going to go take a break. I'm going to go eat a good meal. I'm going to go do whatever I want to do. I'm going to go get that massage, you know, I'm going to go take a walk in the neighborhood. You know, I'm going to do what makes me happy. And that's a huge priority, because you're no good to any of these other domains of our life if you're not in a good place. So.
No, beautifully said. You said it very succinctly, you know, and in the case of like HOA and pretty much all the other stories that you said as well, you were the change that you wanted to see. And that's a huge, huge message to everybody out there. Carla, I've had you here for a little over an hour. You said I had you forever. I'm not going to hold you forever. I'm not going to hold you forever. I want to make sure that you have the rest of your day. But before we completely wrap up, there's so many call to action, so many great things that we said today, but is there any last little nugget that you would like to share with the audience, whether it's something that we said, something that we haven't said, reemphasize something, whatever it might be? What would be your last little nugget today?
Oh, okay. Well, two, really find what motivates you. Like, what is the thing that motivates you? And go do that. But the big nugget is this, is that we don't have forever. And if you don't do that, you're going to have regret. You will regret not doing it. And you don't want to feel that at the end of your life. You want to look back and say, I did it. At least I went for it. Maybe it didn't work out, but I gave it all I got. So my big nugget is, please don't allow for any regret in your life. Go after your dreams. We don't have forever. Find out what lights you up and go get it. At least give it your best to do what you have to do to make that happen. Mm.
Carla, I love your energy. I love your spirit. I love everything that we talked about today. And really tying it all together with the origins of Walsh Wednesday. Like, when I first did this, starting back in high school, the very first iteration of Walsh Wednesday, I was terrified to do it. It wasn't a podcast yet. It was a performance series I did in high school. And it was me playing guitar on cafeteria tables and just performing for people. And it was like a monthly thing I did. And surprisingly, I didn't get bullied into the next town. It actually went over really well. But I was just as I said, how I had sweat stains when I went around doing the vote, I was so terrified to do that too, because high schoolers are the toughest critics. But I came up with a line that I still live by to this day. I was even able to incorporate it into one of my songs too. And it's the lead-off single of my last album. But the line is, I'd rather regret doing something than regret doing nothing at all. And I live by that. I live by that day in, day out. And that's the way that I live my life. That's the reason why I have this show. And for you to end things on the exact message that this show is based off of. Perfect.
Boom. You're a soulmate. Like, you get it. This has been a really fun, it's really fun to talk to someone that gets it. I loved your questions and everything that you brought out for people to listen to. And so thank you so much for having me and for the conversation. It's so great.
Well, just like how I've had your husband on a few times, if you would ever like to come back on in the future, I would love to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll come back.
Absolutely. And guys, make sure that you pick up Stop Trying. We'll have all the links in the description of this episode so you can find the book. You can find more on Carla. You can read up on her. You can follow along on social media. There are so many great things for you to do. Don't try to do it. Do it and show up for it. All right. Make sure that you check it out. Again, Carla, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Connor.
I'm Carla.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, MHA of Dutchess County, Foam and Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Locks That Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Filming Kleiman Collins and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon.